This episode of the Children's Literature Podcast is brought to you by New Friends. New Friends, I couldn't have done it without you. Welcome to the Children's Literature Podcast. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. This episode is a Leicestershire Writers Christmas Party. Over the last year, I devoted one episode a month to children's writers who are from Leicestershire. I wanted to do this as a way to better get to know the place I've come to call home, as well as do what I can to help support my local community of authors. To finish out the year, several of them have sent in a little something so I could assemble this episode as a Christmas present for you listeners. I have had so much fun getting to know each of these writers. When I was lucky enough to interview one of them, I was always struck by how awesome it was to get to speak to someone who was so much smarter than me. I'm very grateful for the time they shared with all of us here on the show, and while I'll be moving on from this year's monthly theme of local authors, I plan to keep up with all their work in the future. Now, get nice and comfortable, and welcome to the Leicestershire Writers' Christmas Party. We'll start with a contribution from Jonathan Emmett that expresses the exact opposite of what we're meant to feel at this time of year. Jonathan's been on the show twice, once back in February when we discussed his work as an author more generally, and again in August when his latest book, The Tyrannosaur's Feathers, was published. He's got some poetry for you, but don't worry, it's not the boring kind.
It's Jonathan Emmett here, and I have a Christmas poem for you, although it's more of an after Christmas poem, really. One of the things that children love about Christmas is receiving presents, but if they're anything like the child I used to be, one of the things children might be less enthusiastic about is being told you have to write thank you letters to the people who gave you those presents. This poem is in the form of a thank you letter from a child very similar to Bradley Bartleby, who is the main character in a picture book I wrote called The Santa Trap. The poem is called Yours Ungratefully. To Auntie Joan and Uncle Ray, I did say thanks on Christmas Day, but Mum says you gave so much stuff just saying it was not enough. She says the least that I should do is write a note to say thank you. Quite why I should, I do not know, but Mum insists, so here I go. Thank you for the action figure. My friend has got one, only bigger. Thank you for the new canoe. I'll put it with my other two. Thank you for the mega maze. A pity that was last year's craze. Thank you for the cuddly toy. It's perfect for a younger boy. Thank you for the spinning top. They'll love it at the charity shop. Thank you for the painting set. Was this the best that you could get? And thank you for the microscope. You still have the receipt, I hope. Phew! I'm glad I'm done with that. Yours sincerely, Spoilt Brat. I hope that you enjoyed that, and I hope that you don't write any thank you letters like that yourself. Merry Christmas to all the Children's Literature Podcast's listeners.
Thanks so much, Jonathan. I'll try to remember not to write any thank you notes that sound like that, though it sure is fun to think about doing it. And now here's Emily Owen to say hello. I featured Emily in September, focusing on her books about her experience with a rare medical condition that took away her hearing, but not her endless optimism.
Hi everyone, just wanted to wish you all a Merry Christmas. I hope you have a wonderful time, whatever you do. And as an author, I should say, I hope you also have some time for some books and reading over Christmas. Best wishes to you all the best for 2024.
Much appreciated, Emily. Next is a reading from Ben Dixon, author of the Neil Peel series. Neil is an angsty teenager, so of course he's going to agonize over choosing Christmas gifts. In this short passage from Neil Peel's Rival, his agonizing is interrupted by the arrival of a delightfully immature Christmas card.
Last Christmas, I gave you my heart, but the very next day, you gave it away. I knew that very soon I'd be looking over Stephen's unwanted Christmas presents while he considered mine. Our annual swap may have seemed a little ungrateful, but it was nothing compared with the lengths to which George Michael's girlfriend took regifting. The familiar lyrics of this Wham! Song made me look for meaning in them as I lay on the sofa on the Saturday before Christmas, trying to find inspiration for the presents I was still yet to buy this year, my hope being that festive music would help. My financial situation was not strong, so I hated the idea that when I had actually spent my own money on a present, it might not be appreciated. However, inspiration was not flowing today, and I was relieved by the distraction brought by my dad's voice in the hallway. "Christmas card for you, Neil." My heart leapt at the hope it might have been from Fleur. After all, who else would be sending me a card through the post? I'd already had one from Cameron and Grubb, as well as a homemade one from Stephen, on which he'd drawn Father Christmas pooing down the chimney. He'd written, "Drop another log on the fire this Christmas," above his masterpiece of artwork. Needless to say, this card had pride of place on the desk in my bedroom.
That scene instantly tells you what you need to know about Neil Peel. He's immature, he's trying to figure out his social life, and he's still got time for a good poo joke. Thanks, Ben. We'll now hear from Anne Fine, who I featured in November. During our interview, I found out that Anne has the ability to be witty, sarcastic, funny, and thought-provoking all at once. And with this little contribution to our party, she's shown me that she's also profoundly thoughtful. She's sharing some of her favorite Christmas lyrics and writings about Christmas time.
Well, I will admit that Christmas is not my favorite time of year. I mean, I have no religious beliefs, and I loathe shopping with all my heart and all my soul and all my strength. And I think that Christmas is a tyranny that, if you let it, will squat on your life and your pocketbook for weeks. However, I've always loved hymns, and particularly carols. And my favourite carol was always that very mysterious "We Three Kings of Orient Are," "Strange, strange journey or pilgrimage to see the Christ child." I also love the idea of the turning of the year from gathering darkness to growing light and hope. The first thing I'm going to read is a very few lines from John Updike. This is from a short story from 1970 called "The Carol Sing," published in The New Yorker. And as the character stands at the community carol sing, he's thinking about all the people around him and why they're there. And this tiny section starts with the carol that they're currently singing. "Rise and bake your Christmas bread. Christians, rise. The world is bare and blank and dark with want and care. Yet Christmas comes in the morning." And then he thinks, well, why anything? Why do we come every year, sure as the solstice, to carol these antiquities that, if you listened to the words, would break your heart? Silence, darkness, Jesus, angels. Better, I suppose, to sing than to listen. Now, Laurie Lee is an English writer, best known for his memoir of childhood, Cider with Rosie. His poems mainly focus on nature and the countryside, and here in Twelfth Night, he takes us into the imagery of the Christmas story and the universal theme of pilgrimage and the cycles of death and birth, darkness and light. Twelfth Night. "No night could be darker than this night, no cold so cold, as the blood snaps like a wire and the heart's sap stills and the year seems defeated. Oh, never again, it seems, can green things run or sky birds fly or the grass exhale its humming breath powdered with pimpernels from this dark lung of winter. Yet here are lessons for the final mile of pilgrim kings, the mile still left when all have reached their tether's end, that mile where the child lies hid. For see, below the hand, the earth already warms and glows. For men with shepherd's eyes, there are signs in the dark, the turning stars, the lamb's returning time. Out of this utter death, he's born again. His birth, our saviour. From terror's equinox, he climbs and grows, drawing his finger's light across our blood, the Son of Heaven and the Son of God. And on the same topic, T.S. Eliot's wonderful The Journey of the Magi. A cold coming we had of it. Just the worst time of the year for a journey, and such a long journey. The ways deep and the weather sharp, the very dead of winter. And the camels galled, sore-footed, refractory, lying down in the melting snow. There were times we regretted the summer palaces on slopes, the terraces and the silken gulls bringing sherbet. Then the camel men cursing and grumbling and running away and wanting their liquor and women, and the night fires going out and the lack of shelters, and the cities hostile and the towns unfriendly and the villages dirty and charging high prices. A hard time we had of it. At the end, we preferred to travel all night, sleeping in snatches, with the voices singing in our ears, saying that this was all folly. Then at dawn, we came down to a temperate valley, wet, below the snow line, smelling of vegetation, with a running stream and a watermill beating the darkness, and three trees on the low sky, and an old white horse galloped away in the meadow. Then we came to a tavern with vine leaves over the lintel, six hands at an open door dicing for pieces of silver, and feet kicking the empty wineskins. But there was no information, and so we continued and arrived at evening, not a moment too soon, finding the place. It was, you may say, satisfactory. All this was a long time ago, I remember, and I would do it again. But set down this. Were we led all that way for birth or death? There was a birth, certainly. We had evidence and no doubt. I had seen birth and death, but had thought they were different. This birth was hard and bitter agony for us, like death, our death. We returned to our places, these kingdoms, but no longer at ease here in the old dispensation, with an alien people clutching their gods. I should be glad of another death.
Our final piece is a story told by Tom Phillips. He's also known as Tom the Tale Teller, and for good reason. In addition to storytelling all over England, he's the author of two books of folklore, Leicestershire Folktales for Children and Forest Folktales for Children. Make sure you're nice and comfortable as he shares this wintry tale from Norway, The Cat on the Dovrefjell.
Halvor lived with his family in a lovely log cabin at the edge of the woodland, overlooking the frozen land high up on the Dovrefjell. It was a quiet, blissful existence, apart from one night a year. It was Christmas Eve, and Halvor and his family were preparing, when there was a knock at the door. Halvor opened the door, and there stood a traveller, a stranger dressed head to toe in furs, covered in snow and ice. "Friend," said the traveller, "would you be so kind as to offer me a bed for the night, and maybe some of that lovely food I see you've prepared? For I am travelling from the north with my friend, my companion, down to perform for the king at New Year's." Halvor could see the traveller had spotted what was on the table behind him, for he was drooling and dribbling. You see, on the table behind Halvor sat a feast of freshly cooked meats, of pies, of pastries, of puddings and vegetables. "Of course," said Halvor, You are welcome to stay here all night, have as much food as you like, and take the pick of any bed you want to sleep in. For me and my family will not be here tonight. Why ever not? Asked the stranger. Well, said Halvor, you see, we have visitors on Christmas Eve. For as long as we can remember, the trolls have come. From all over the Dovrefell they come, and they make a mess of our house on Christmas Eve, unless, of course, we leave out this feast, for then they gorge themselves on the food, and they tend to fall asleep and be gone by dawn, not making any mess. Oh, well, maybe I could help, replied the stranger, me and my friend. And he gave a whistle, and to the door came a huge, great, white polar bear. Halvor staggered backwards. It's quite all right, said the stranger. This is a fully trained white bear. He is my companion, and he is what I am going to show to the King of Denmark. He has requested me and my friend the bear to come and perform for him. If we stay here tonight, said the stranger, maybe the trolls might have a little run-in with my friend here. We might be able to solve your problems. That's great! That's fabulous! Replied Halvor. We shall go, me and my family, and sleep in the cabin that we have, the small little cabin in the woods behind this one, and we shall leave you and your friend to it. And I can't wait to see you in the morning to hear how it's been. But Halvor and his family left, a few things in hand, and off they went to their second cabin to spend the night in the woods. The traveller and his companion, the great white bear, they entered the cabin. They settled down at the table and they began to eat their fill. And it wasn't long before they were both full to bursting. The nights drew in early in the middle of winter, for it was already dark outside, and the traveller and the bear were exhausted through so many days of travelling and rough sleeping in the snow. The man, he settled down in one of the bedrooms on a freshly made comfy bed. The bear, well, he snuggled down like a cat on a rug next to a blazing fire in the hearth. And they both slept dreamless sleeps. The moon was high in the sky. It was a cloudless night. And crunching over the freshly fallen snow from the day before came the trolls. A little one came first. He opened the door slowly. By the light of the embers, he could see the food laid out on the table. Come on, lads! Let's have our fill! Woohoo! And in ran the small troll, followed by a big troll, and then a medium-sized troll, and then fat trolls, and thin trolls, and ugly trolls, and even uglier trolls. Some trolls with noses dangling down to sweep the floor, other trolls with ears so large even an elephant would be green with envy. Trolls of all shapes and sizes, none of which particularly pleasant to look at. The trolls were so fixated on the food, they didn't see the great white bear sleeping by the fire. They began to fill their faces, food and drink going everywhere as they guzzled and guzzled and slapped and slooped and gobbled up the food. It wasn't until the food was nearly gone, though, that one of the smaller trolls caught sight of the great white bear lying there next to the fire, asleep. It went over, and it said, "Oh, look!" it said. "It's a great big white cat! Halvor and the family have got a cat!" But that's what he thought it was, for it was making a purring sound. What the bear was actually doing was snoring, but the troll wasn't clever enough to figure this one out. And began to stroke the cat. "Nice kitty! Nice kitty!" And then it grabbed the cat's face and smushed its cheeks and rubbed its ugly face against the cat. The cat, or the bear, woke up. Eyes opening wide, straight into the troll's eyes. And the purrs of the snores replaced by growls. Well, needless to say, before long, the snores and the growls were replaced with yowls and screams, tooth and claw gnashed and thrashed. The polar bear went to work on the trolls. The trolls did not like this vicious kitty cat, and they soon made a hefty, fast retreat out of the door. A bump, a bang, a wallop. They managed to get out, but not necessarily all in one piece. And they disappeared off into the snow, never to return again. The next morning, when Halvor and his family returned, the house was tidy. The food tidied away, and breakfast ready there on the table. No sign of the traveller and no sign of his great white bear. They didn't quite know what had happened. But they celebrated Christmas like they always did, and they were thankful for the state of the house and for the breakfast. One year later, Christmas Eve, Halvor had prepared all the food, and he was out in the woods, chopping wood ready for the fire in their reserve cabin in the woodland, when he heard a little voice from behind a tree.
Halvor?
Yes, said Halvor.
Hello, it's one of the trolls. We'd like to say we're sorry about what we've done in previous years, and we'd just like to check. Have you still got that great big white kitty cat living with you? You know, the one with the really sharp teeth and claws and a very grumpy attitude.
Halvor suddenly realised what had happened, and he replied to the voice. He said, Oh, our kitty cat, the great white kitty cat. Yes, yes. Soft as anything for us. Doesn't like trolls, though. Yeah, but yeah, she's still there. But she's also had kittens. 7 of them. And they're growing up to be just as big and just as grumpy as their mother. Why, are you coming to visit them tonight?
Oh, no, replied the voice. No, we had more than enough of its company last year, and so we'll think we'll give your house a miss this Christmas Eve, and maybe every Christmas Eve from now on. Thank you!
And sure enough, the trolls never returned, and Halvor and his family lived, like with all good stories, happily ever after. Well, there you are. A festive story for a festive time of year. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Tom the Tale Teller Phillips. I'm wishing you all a Merry Christmas and hope for the new year. Thank you and goodbye.
Bravo, Tom! Thanks so much to all the writers who joined us for our little Christmas party. I hope that all of you listeners have a safe and happy holiday season. I'll speak to you all again starting in the new year. You've been listening to the Children's Literature Podcast. Please subscribe and give the show a rating. Send comments to letters@childrensliteraturepodcast.com. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. Thanks for listening.